think a lot of you were with me last December when we traveled to Riverdale, that wonderful town where people care and life is usually fair, only to discover that Sam Shoemaker had planned to tear down the old Kalinske house and build a dollar store. But then we discovered that Carl Kalinske had actually left the grand old Victorian house to none other than Sabo. But the house was about to fall down on its own, and the tax lien on the property was thousands and thousands of dollars. But if you recall, we witnessed a Christmas miracle when they discovered that rare collection of Copenhagen Christmas china. And the lawyer, Skip Worthington III, brokered a deal with a London auction house, and he took care of all the back taxes, and now the house has been fully restored to its former glory, and the rightful owner, Sabo, has moved in. Now, Sabo was hopeful that his friend Raul would live with him, but he's left town. Somebody told me Raul had moved up to Virginia Beach. And so Sabo is in that big old house all by himself. One morning down at Gower's Drugs, as Maud was enjoying her large glass of chocolate milk, that luxury she never had as a child, Sabo announced that he was going to open up a hotel. Maud almost choked. Sabo, you can't just open up a hotel. That's a residential area. There's zoning, there are permits. And then Sabo said, well, I just have a bed and breakfast. And she said, Sabo, it's the same thing. And who's going to cook the breakfast? You don't cook. He hadn't thought about that. And Skip Worthington III, who was getting a cup of coffee, overheard the conversation and said, Sabo, since we sold that Christmas china, you don't need to worry about money. Everything is taken care of. But see, the issue wasn't the money. The issue was that Sabo was lonely. And so one day he put a sign up in front of the old Victorian house that read, Travelers Inn. He didn't have any guests that we know of until a few weeks ago down at Gower's Drugs. The gang had gathered for breakfast and chocolate milk, and Sabo was having his usual breakfast of 3 pancakes, 3 eggs, 3 slices of bacon, hash browns, grits, and a biscuit. And Maud was enjoying her large glass of chocolate milk, that luxury that she never had as a child. And Agnes was complaining that her name had been left off of the announcement of the prayer garden in the church newsletter. Maud, who was at the bottom of the glass and slurped her milk, said, but Agnes, it's not about you, it's about God. You don't have to preach to me, Maud, and don't slurp your milk. You know how much that irritates me. All I'm saying is, if people have a question, they just need to know that I'm the chair of the committee. Well, if they have a question about prayer, I would think they would go to the preacher instead of you. Well, it's not about prayer. Well, I thought it was a prayer garden. Well, all of a sudden, this argument was interrupted when the front door opened and a stranger meandered in. He had a weathered face, big calloused hands. He had that appearance of somebody who had been ridden hard and put up wet. He had on a pair of faded jeans, a checkered shirt, cowboy boots, and a vest. He ambled over to the counter, sat down beside Sabo. You could have heard a pin drop. Everybody stared at the stranger. He looked around and said, "What's a fella got to do to get a cup of coffee around here?" And Dawn, who had been frozen behind the counter, almost stumbled over herself to get him a cup of coffee. And she said, "Would you like some breakfast?" He pointed to Sabo's plate and said, "I'll have what he has." Dawn went back into the kitchen, and Maud, who has never met a stranger, said, "Sir, I don't believe we've met. My name is Maud Lawson, and this is Agnes Shoemaker. She's chair of the prayer garden, in case you need to know." Agnes just glared at her. "And we don't believe we've met you. What's your name?"
"My name's Puddin'Tane. Ask me again, I'll tell you the same."
Sabo said, "That's a funny name."
"Sabo, I think he's just joking," Maud said.
"You say his name's Sabo and you think I'm joking?"
"Well, Mr. Puddin'Tane, what brings you to Riverdale?"
"I'm a shoe salesman, can't you tell?"
Sabo said, I need a new pair of shoes."
"Sabo," Maud said, "I think he's just joking with us." Maud and Agnes didn't know what to think of this stranger. When Dawn brought his breakfast, he dove in like he hadn't had anything to eat in a week. When he had finished and was working on his second cup of coffee, he said,
"Where's a fellow like me find a place to stay in a town like this?"
Sabo said, "Oh, you can stay with me. I run the Traveler's Inn."
"How much is that going to cost?"
"Oh, it's free. My lawyer says I don't have to worry about money." Maud, who was suddenly very alarmed, said, Sir, Sabo doesn't have a license to have guests in his house, but there's a really nice hotel out on the bypass, and that's probably where you need to stay."
"Reckon how much they're going to charge me. An arm and a leg, I would think. Sabo here says I can stay at his house for free. You don't have to have no license for free, do you?"
And a few minutes later, Sabo and Puddin'Tane walked out the door.
"Elmer, we've got to do something. Sabo's in trouble."
Late that afternoon, Elmer went back into town in the old green pickup truck, and he turned down Front Street. He rode by Aunt Stella's old house, God rest her soul, and the old Simpson house, and then he pulled up in front of the Kalinsky house. He almost grew up in that house with his first cousin and best friend, Bernard Kalinsky. They did everything together. They were always going to do everything together. And then, the war came. And then that incomprehensible tragedy where Bernard was missing in action. And as you know, he never came home. And then to compound the tragedy, Mr. and Mrs. Kalinsky, his aunt and uncle, started a downward spiral. They became recluses. Isabel Kalinsky, even 30, 35 years after the war, believed that her son one day would come back home. And Mr. Kalinsky, well, he didn't help things. Remember how he used to walk around town pushing that old rusty grocery cart, and he had on an overcoat and a purple toboggan even in the summertime? It's no wonder that everybody called them the crazy Kalinskys. He got out of the truck and walked up the sidewalk, knocked on the front door. Sabo greeted him. "Sabo, I hear you have a guest in your house."
Oh, I do. His name's Puddin'-Tame. You ask him again, he'll tell you the same. Well, I would like to meet Puddin'-Tame. So Sabo goes up the stairs. A few minutes later, the stranger comes down the stairs. Elmer extends his hand. Reluctantly, he shakes his hand. I'm Elmer Lawson. I hear you're going to be here staying with my friend Sabo. Don't believe I know your name.
My name's Puddin'-Tame. Ask me again, I'll tell you the same.
Then very sternly, Elmer said, but you have another name. He paused.
Name's Gus. Gus Gallimore.
Gallimore. There's a bunch of Gallimores around here. You from around here?
Not far away.
Well, Gus, what brings you to Riverdale?
Just passing through. Just passing through.
Well, I want you to know something, Gus. Sabo is my good friend. This house belonged to my aunt and my uncle.
Sir, you don't need to worry. Sabo's fine. Nothing's going to happen here. I'm an honest man.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, Gus. And Elmer got in the old green pickup truck and drove straight to the police station. That afternoon, he received a phone call from the police chief, Mark Link. Police chief, Mark Link. Are you with me? Did you stay at home? He said, Elmer, I believe you have reason to be suspicious. It seems that Mr. Gallimore has sticky fingers. In fact, he has a long history of theft and robbery and, oh, just one thing after another. He's been in and out of jail, been in prison a few times. He just got out of prison in Montana about 2 weeks ago. We're going to keep an eye on him, but you know, Elmer, he hadn't done anything wrong. Now he served his time. But I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll pay him a visit. I'll send an officer over. I'll wait until late tonight after they've gone to bed. That always gets their attention. And I'll just have the officer to meet him so that he knows that we know he's in town. That night, about 11:30, the doorbell rang at the Kalinske house. Sabo came to the door, and there was Officer Sparky Hooks. Everybody knew Sparky. Sparky! Sparky! It's so good to see you! Not even mindful of the fact it was 11:30 at night. Here you got a guest in the house, Sabo. I do. His name Puddin'-Tame. You ask him again, he'll tell you the same. Well, I'd like to meet old Puddin'-Tame. So Sabo bounds up the stairs, and then he quickly comes back and he says, Sparky, Sparky, he gone. The next morning, when Elmer got the phone call, he thought, good. He got the message. He's left town. Later that day, he rode by the Kalinske house, and there was old Puddin'-Tame out working in the yard, trimming the shrubbery. And the next day, he was still working in the yard. They had renovated the house, but had done nothing to the yard. And he was weeding the beds and planting flowers and bringing in mulch and pine straw. And for the next few days, all Gus did was work in the yard at the Kalinske house. On Tuesday morning, as most of you know, every Tuesday morning, Maud goes to Grace's beauty shop. And every other Tuesday, Elmer goes to Timmy's barber shop to get his hair cut. So he's in the barber chair at Timmy's barber shop.
Timmy said, "Elmer, that Kalinske house, I didn't ever think I would see it looking so good." Elmer said, "It's a miracle, isn't it? I just wish my aunt and uncle could see it. They had such a hard time. And when they died, that house was ready to fall down. But it is. It's just beautiful now." Thinking about his aunt and uncle, and knowing that Maud would still be a while before she finished at the beauty shop, Elmer decided to drive through the cemetery just to go by the graves of his aunt and uncle. When he got close to their graves, he noticed that on the graves there was an arrangement of flowers. He hadn't put any flowers on the grave. And so he got out of the truck and walked over. They were fresh cut yellow roses. When he picked Maud up, he said, "I've got something to show you." They rode back to the cemetery. And when Maud saw the flowers, she said, "Elmer, yellow roses, they were your aunt's favorite flowers. Only someone who knew your aunt would know to put yellow roses." The next day, Elmer went back to the cemetery. There were new, fresh cut yellow roses. For the next 3 or 4 days, somebody had replaced the flowers with beautiful yellow roses, fresh flowers every day. Elmer decided to spend the day in the cemetery to find out who was doing this, but no one ever came. But the next morning, there were fresh yellow roses. And so Elmer said, "Maud, I'm going to spend the night in the cemetery." "Elmer, you can't stay up past 9 o'clock. "I know, Maud, but I'm going to try." He took an old lawn chair, put it down under a pine tree, and he watched. There was almost a full moon, so he could clearly see what was going on in the cemetery. He found himself nodding off a few times around 10 or 10:30, and then he kept looking at his watch and he said, "I just don't think I can make it all night. I'm going to stay till midnight, then I'm leaving." About 11:30, he saw a figure. He saw someone carrying a vase of flowers. As he got closer to the grave, he realized it was Gus Gallimore. He went up to the grave, and very carefully, he got on his knees. He took the flowers from the day before, and he replaced them with new, fresh-cut yellow roses. And then he bowed his head. Elmer didn't know if he was praying or what he was doing. And then when he stood up to leave, Elmer walked out from behind the pine tree. "Fancy meeting you here, Gus. I've been noticing on my aunt's grave there have been yellow roses every day. Only somebody who knew her would know that she loved yellow roses. Why don't you tell me the whole story, Gus?" And Gus leaned on one of the monuments, and Elmer sat down in his lawn chair, and this is what he said. "My great-grandfather, Arthur
Arthur Gallimore. He was a missionary to China. I bet some of you knew that. Well, everybody thought my grandfather, his son, was going to be a missionary, but he was a nice, good man, but he didn't become a preacher or a missionary or anything. And then I don't know what happened to my father. My father left my mother about a week before I was born. I never knew my daddy. Never met him. And then right after I was born, my mother got the cancer. She died when I was about 3 years old. I went to live with my grandmother, my grandfather, and they were good folks. But when I got to be about 7 or 8, I guess I was too much for them. So they took me over to the Baptist orphanage. And I was an orphan over there. Good folks over there. But I didn't like all the rules. I guess I started causing trouble. I was about 10 years old. I ran away. They caught me, brought me back. Told me not to do it again. About a year later, I did. I ran away again. This time, they laid the law down to me. When I was 12 years old, I ran away for the last time. I came over here to Riverdale. I was hungry. I was going through some trash, and I saw this old man. This old man pushing an old grocery cart with an overcoat on and a toboggan. I thought that was so strange in the summertime. He told me I could come home with him. And he brought me to the very house where I'm staying now. It's Mr. Kolinsky, nicest man I've ever known in my whole life. He fed me, gave me a place to sleep, told me I could just live there with him and his wife. Now, I'll tell you, Miss Kolinsky, she was a little strange. I'd wake up in the middle of the night and she'd be playing the organ, and sometimes she'd be walking around the house with candles and such. But he was always the best. In fact, he would bring her yellow roses once a week. Well, he told me that school would be taken in soon and we'd need to go register, and I didn't like the sound of that. So I figured I better leave. As nice as they were, I just couldn't stay. But I didn't have any money. So one morning, I got up real early and I went around the house and I stole all their silver. I got silver trays and candlesticks, and I got all the silver I could, and I put it in an old suitcase I found, and I left. Well, I wasn't the smartest guy at 12 years old. I just went to the next town, walked into a pawn shop. I guess I should have known a 12-year-old showing up with a suitcase full of silver is kind of suspicious. The police were taking me back to the Kolinsky house before I knew it, and I just couldn't stand it. I just couldn't stand walking up there having to face Mr. Kolinsky. And we were standing there on the front porch, and he came to the door, and they told him that they had found me in the pawn shop with all that silver. And Mr. Kolinsky, you're not going to believe what he said. He said, "That's right, officer." He said, "This is my boy here. And I gave him all this silver to go pawn it, but I'm glad you brought him back, because see, I didn't give him all the silver. I wanted him to take all the silver to the pawn shop." Well, the officers, they just looked at each other. They walked away. And we went in the house. Mr. Kolinsky, he didn't say a word. Finally, I said, "Mr. Kolinsky, why did you do that? You didn't give me this silver. I stole this silver from you. I did a terrible thing. I stole this silver. Why did you do that?" And he told me. He said, "I had a boy. I had a son. And he went off to the war. And he can't ever come home. But son, this can be your home. And I don't care where you go, and I don't care what you do. But you can always come back here, and this can be your home."
I didn't know what to do. I'd never been treated like that. Kindest man I've ever met. But I couldn't stay. I left a few days later, but I didn't take anything that time. I just left. Then I guess I've been in trouble my whole life. I'd steal something, and I never hurt anybody, but I'd steal stuff, and they'd catch me, and put me in the jail, and I'd end up in prison some. And well, I was up in prison in Montana. They had a chaplain up there, kind of reminded me of Mr. Kolinsky. And he kept coming up to me saying, Gus, Jesus is calling you, Gus. Jesus wants you to come home. Well, the last week I was there, we had a chapel service. And he preached on the fifth chapter of Romans, that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Didn't just die for the good people, he died for all of us. And he talked about forgiveness. And he talked about going home. And then they started playing that song about all who are weary. And I remember it took me back one night in the middle of the night at the Kolinsky house. I woke up and Mrs. Kolinsky was playing that song, all who are weary, come home. And I'm weary. And when the chaplain told me that I needed to come home, this is the only home. This is the only home I've ever known. And I kept thinking about that song, all who were weary, come home.